So I want to go back to illness because I hear that Aoife has some dirt on the Dickinsons, and I don't want to ask the right question. I just want her to tell me the dirt. Aoife, what's the dirt you got on the Dickinsons?
We do like some dirt.
Okay. Everybody's dying of consumption, and girls and young women are particularly vulnerable. And in fact, that time when Sue comes back angry and says, death is not a metaphor, to Emily, when she comes back and finds that Emily's just been faking it. There are about 18, 19, 20 somehow, about this time, and it's the same year. Dickinson loses two of her closest friends from consumption, which is by and large pulmonary tuberculosis. And in that same period of time, in 24 months, scarlet fever makes an appearance in town. And in 24 months, 23 girls die. So it's like a girl a month. So lots of those illnesses, right, that were deadly then, we now have vaccines for, or we have antibiotics or something, or we just know better how to treat it. So it's just not killing us. But it did put Edward Dickinson on super high alert. So when we see him, the maid is about to take a tray up to Emily, and he says, no, I'll take it. And it seems kind of odd. And it's actually not odd, because usually when someone was ill, the family took care and they would hire someone to do the cooking or the cleaning or the laundry or something like that. But basically family did the nursing, which is partly why girls and young women were dying more rapidly than boys, were more risk, because they were having the face-to-face, right? Because tuberculosis, like COVID, is a face-to-face.
Sexism be around every corner.
So the idea that Edward would take it up, he was on like super high alert around illness in the family. Like his letters were always anxious about, you know, having his wife not carry the water in, use the hired man, get Austin to do it. He takes Emily out of school two or three times. You know, when she goes to Mount Holyoke, that year when she's away at Mount Holyoke, she comes home early because he's worried about her health. So there is this sort of hyper alert. But meanwhile, Emily grows up with the Matthews family living in an outbuilding. The Matthews are an English immigrant family, Anne and Richard Matthews. Actually, Richard Matthews shows up in a Dickinson poem about going to the field today or something like that. Anyway, there's a poem that he makes an appearance in. 9 of their 16 children in an outbuilding on the Dickinson property die from the illnesses associated with poverty, which basically means they die on Edward Dickinson's watch. Edward Dickinson could have changed that story. He's impoverishing them. I mean, he's not paying them enough so that they can have enough to feed their kids. And so they're succumbing to diphtheria or typhoid or whatever, measles, whatever is going around, consumption. So that's one thing that I think is really compelling, that that Dickinson watched. And she actually even sort of records this in her letters, where she talks about Pat. Pat is one of Dick Matthews's kids, and she talks about him being bound out, like he's about to die, and she's having a conversation with him because he's trying to learn how to read. And so they're intimately involved because they're living on an outbuilding. So kind of the anxiety about health, but also what it means to be poor, where you've got that sort of comorbidity or those two things that are kind of running. Mm-hmm. But then,
it sort of reminds me of what happened with COVID. Those who could stay home stayed home and they were safer, and then that's those who couldn't, who were left out, who were too poor or had the wrong jobs,
exactly,
still had to go out there,
right? And we were praising them as essential workers and thanking them, but they're still
as they were dying.
So here's another one. Smallpox is practically eradicated because a vaccine's been developed, I think, in the 18th century, where they understood that you just take a little bit of, right? So smallpox doesn't come through Amherst very much. Came through when Dickinson was like nursing, like 1831, just born. But then it comes through again in 1864 because someone goes to a army camp outside of Boston to visit and then comes back. There's a tenement in the center of town I mean, it's like an apartment house or something. I mean, tenement basically just meant multifamily dwelling, but it may have involved sort of communal kitchen facilities or communal laundry facility or communal bathroom. You know what I'm saying? Like there may be some of that shared stuff, but there's a tenement in the middle of town, pejoratively called the Beehive because of the frequency of the coming and going. It is a predominantly African-American tenement to make ends meet in Amherst. If you're Black, you probably have 3 or 4 jobs. So yeah, you're coming and going a lot. So the person who goes to that army base in outside of Boston lives in this tenement in the center of Amherst, gets affected or infected with smallpox, comes back. And I mean, it'd been almost 35 years. So it's not like people are being, you know, regularly inoculated because it seems like it's almost eradicated. So she comes back and they decide, the selectmen of Amherst, who decide that they're going to move everybody from this tenement to a pest house. They commandeer a barn in the next town over in Hadley, and they bring everybody over there. There's 15 to 18 cases. 3 children die, 3 girls die. And I'm particularly interested in this story for 2 reasons. One is because I think that the white people of Amherst, I mean, they didn't want this apartment house in the center of town. They did not want Black people living in the center of town. It's like a couple of doors from where the Dickinsons used to live. And so everybody gets removed to this barn, this pest house. They never come back there. So you've got, I don't know how many people displaced, 50 people displaced, maybe more, who then have to move other places. 3 people die. Okay, so one of the people who dies is Eva Newport, and her uncle and her grandfather work for the Dickinsons, have worked for the Dickinsons. Mm. So Eva Newport is 7. She's a first cousin of W.E.B. Du Bois because her mother is a Burkhart, right? He's William Edward Burkhart. So he's about 4 years old when his first cousin dies. The other one is Hattie Finneman. She's a second cousin of W.E.B. Du Bois. Because remember, he lives 55 miles away in Great Barrington, southeast of Amherst. The third person is Angeline Palmer's sister-in-law. And remember, we've talked about Angeline, right? So we get to see 2 moments, the Angeline Palmer, and Flame, you don't know this story, but a little girl almost gets taken to Georgia and sold into slavery. And many white people of the Dickinson stature aid and abet this, including the selectmen of the town who had an opportunity, who should have put their foot down and told this family, you cannot take, because Angeline was a ward of the town as an orphan. And they should have stepped in and said, no, you can't take her. She needs to remain in Amherst. And then secondly, creating the pest house where they remove all of these families into a barn, increasing their face-to-face, right? You put them in a pest house, but you're also increasing face-to-face transmission. So it's like we see 2 times the Board of Selectmen, the white town fathers, operating in a way that just lays it all out, that you could be a free Black person in Amherst. It doesn't get you that much. It is so hard living in Amherst. And if you were Black, if you were Black Indigenous or Indigenous, there were so many ways in which those Board of Selectmen could have taken a different choice.
I mean, it feels very much, you know, that like we have to put caveats around what it meant to be a free Black person in Amherst at this time, if, you know, what's going on with white men has this much effect on their lives, you know, especially the fact that they were able to just move them to another place because that didn't work for them.
Right. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, her father is such a cruel, like he's one of those who decides to do nothing moment, like you were talking about this with like his deep anxiety about his own family and sickness versus his tenants essentially, and how he didn't care while more than half of their children died on his watch. There's this like really not just indecisive, which I mean, this underlines what they brought out in George too, of this sort of like, well, what am I supposed to do? Tell them they're wrong, when it's like, it is wrong. that's the point. It is wrong. And to refuse to take the stand is just as harmful.
I just wanted to say, and you know, and Breezy, you followed up, Flame, you followed up on it in particular when you're talking about Dickinson's father being a person willing not to say anything, choosing, deciding not to do anything, right? And it's just, I don't know, you know, I'm not white, so I don't know. You know, I don't know what it's like to be white. I always wonder, you know, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like this... This moment, for instance, that we're talking about where Dickinson decides to let this family living on his property little by little die and not do something about it, knowing why and how they're dying. You know what I mean? It just seems like that's a, I don't know, that's like a trend or something, or like something that keeps getting inherited. Do y'all know what I mean? And I want to know, I don't know. I don't, I guess we can't like fix that on the show, but
but I guess we can.
How you think, celebrate? We could try.
I think we could certainly do it.